This is Building Bridges, your community and labor report, produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. And now, Building Bridges brings you an interview with the legitimate president of Honduras in the aftermath of the country's recent fraudulent election. In it, President Zelaya urges the U.S. to reject the election, as the Honduran people have in their mass boycott of it, subsequent to the ouster in a coup of their populist, democratically elected president.
Haunted by the ghost of authoritarian governments not long in the grave, countries like Brazil, Argentina, and Chile have argued that an election held by an illegitimate government is, by definition, illegal. But the U.S.'s fingerprints are all over the coup as Obama supports the oligarchy and dashes the hopes for new engagement with Latin America.
Andres Contreras, with the Program on the Americas, Director for Nonviolence International and Coordinator of Democracy Now! In Spanish, also joins us from the Brazilian Embassy in Honduras, where President Zelaya has taken refuge. Now, President Manuel Zelaya, in an exclusive interview, condemns sellout of Honduran democracy. Andres, we understand there was an extremely high rate of abstention from participation in what we certainly view as an illegal election. Why don't you catch us up and tell us exactly what has been going on and what we should know about the election that was recently held?
Here in the embassy of Brazil in Tegucigalpa, where the president has been for the last 75 days, he made it very clear that this election that took place was clearly part of the coup regime's effort to cover up its serious violations. And this abstention in the election is exactly what President Zelaya has been calling for, as well as the national resistance against the coup d'etat in Honduras. So both of these calls ended up being quite successful, given that the electorate was very responsive in not being complicit in allowing this election to be a demonstration for what the regime has wanted to do. The dominant media, both here in Honduras and around the world, has mostly covered up the issue of the very small numbers of participation, which is estimated at less than 40%. And really have only focused on the victory of Porfirio Lobo, known as Pepe Lobo, and also the fact that this really is a way of moving on from the crisis that originated on June the 28th with the violent kidnapping of President Zelaya and his expatriation and many other repressive moves by the coup makers.
Could you expand on the repressive measures by the coup as it relates to the period around and during the elections?
The very day before the election, on November the 28th, that's Saturday, there was a raid by military and police in the city of Siguatepec in the middle of the country, a cooperative that prides itself on building the concept of solidarity economy. This network called the Red Comal, which is the Comal Network, were raided in a very violent way. Equipment was stolen and ransacked. The police produced a warrant well after the raiding of the office itself. Of course, the warrant was given by the coup regime justice system, because the Red Comal has been active in the resistance since the coup itself. On the day of the election, November 29th, especially in San Pedro Sula, the second largest city in the country, there was a peaceful demonstration by folks who were refusing to participate in the election and showing off their pinky finger to show that there is no ink on that finger, which means that no ink was used to poison them with having participated in the election itself. Once voters do vote, they are given indelible ink, sign that they have already voted. That push in San Pedro Sula was really bloody, and tear gas and water cannon, people were hospitalized and detained just for peacefully expressing that they would not participate in the election. This is just a couple examples of the repression that has been happening around the country for over 5 months now.
Andres, what does the absence of a popular vote really mean in the political long run as we watch the installation of Porfiria Lobo?
The low-level participation in the vote itself on Election Day is a success story for the growing resistance the past 5 months. Honduras has not been known as a country in Central America that had uprisings, unlike its neighbors, both to the north with Guatemala and to the west with El Salvador and to the south with Nicaragua. All of those countries have had very long-term uprisings and challenges to the dominant paradigm. Here in Honduras, there has been some of that, but it's never been as active or as organized. But these past few months have shown that the Honduran people themselves have awakened to knowing that there are many, many thousands who really want a profound change. So the expression of low participation in the voting was a triumph of the organizing itself, and that has empowered the resistance for long-term planning in terms of how to achieve what they've really wanted to get at, which is a national assembly which will draw up a constitution that will really respond to the needs of the masses of the people rather than to a few that belong to the elite.
Who are the people that are in the resistance and what groups are they members of?
There are dozens of groups that form part of what's called the National Resistance Front against the coup d'etat. In Honduras, we're talking about labor unions, particularly FIBIS is the union that deals with bottling soft drinks and liquors. That has been the headquarters of where the resistance has been meeting primarily. So not only unions, but women's organizations. There's a whole group of organizations that call themselves feminists in resistance, student organizations. There are members of people of the faith community and people who have been very active in the human rights struggle for decades, groups like COFADE, the Commission of Family Members of the Disappeared, or the CPTRT, which is the Committee for the Prevention of Torture, and the CODE, which is the Non-Governmental Human Rights Commission. Those are some of the groups that have come together that have strengthened in this coalitional effort, and it's very impressive to see that happening in Honduras.
Andres, we're still saddled with the publicity here or whatever information does come across, and it's been relatively quiet since the election, by deliberacy, no doubt. But the issue that has continuously put forth is the accusation that it is really about President Zelaya wanting to work outside of the constitutional framework and merely perpetuate his own presidency. Please comment on that.
That's been part of what Mr. Goebbels would have been proud of. He was the Nazi propaganda minister who basically said if you tell a lie loud enough and long enough, then it will be believed, and especially in this case in the dominant media. President Zelaya wanting to have a non-binding consultation with the people of Honduras in order to have them express their will about whether they want a new constitution or not. The opponents of President Zelaya chose to interpret that as saying that he wanted to change the constitution in order to extend his term limit, which would have been impossible anyway. His term ends in January. He was not a candidate for the election. Well before the coup, it was very clear that he was not going to be a candidate. So that was the fallacy that has no basis in fact. What President Zelaya has been wanting to do is what he did on his very first day of office in the year 2005, where his very first legislative proposal had to do with citizen participation in the government. And he moved forward with this initially, and then what became known as La Cuarta Urna, which is the fourth ballot, that was to be voted on in late June on the 28th, and that would have been the first three would have been for president, second for the legislature, the third for municipal elections, and the fourth ballot would have been a simple question as to whether the Honduran people wanted to move forward toward a constituent assembly gathering that could consider changing the constitution. And it was non-binding, so even if it had been 100% voting in favor of that, there was no legal force to obligate that to happen. So the election that would have happened on the 28th of June was completely suppressed, and an election on November 29th was a farce of an election, which ended up showing the world, as far as the dominant media is concerned, that Honduras has a new elected leader who will replace President Zelaya. And the hope is of U.S. policy, as well as of the coup regime here, that President Zelaya will just become a memory from the past.
By the way, wasn't the constitution that remains in place really a holdover from, what, I guess about 1982 and some of the darkest and most reactionary days in Honduras?
You're right about that. The early 80s very much represented some of the most repressive and bloody years here in this country. The U.S. ambassador at that time was John Negroponte from the Reagan years, and Negroponte was instrumental in increasing military aid in incredible amounts to the military here in Honduras, and then it became a staging ground for wars against both the Sandinistas in Nicaragua by supporting the Contra forces, counter-revolutionaries, and then also engaging in war against the FMLN resistance in El Salvador. So, yes, that is the period of time in which the Constitution was put together, and it represents primarily the interests of the oligarchy, the interests of the economic and political elite that have dominated this country for many decades.
You anticipated my next question because I wanted to ask you about who are the elite, who is the oligarchy in terms of economic interests. We know in this country that Chiquita Brands is part of that, but who else is there?
The oligarchy here in Honduras is represented by names like Ferrari and Facuse. And, for instance, Adolfo Facuse is the head of the COEP. The COEP is the Council on Private Enterprise of Honduras. This is the man who ended up going to Miami even after his visa was revoked and ended up being deported. And he has been a very strong advocate for the coup. So the media here in Honduras, more than 90% of it is controlled by a handful of people. And this is true of the banks, the supermarkets, of the major industries. And something that's unique about Honduras is that the military themselves have become an economic power, much to the chagrin, actually, of some of the most wealthy interests in the nation. So all of them combined with other elites, that's the economic elite, but then there's the political elite of the both National and Liberal Party. President Zelaya is from the Liberal Party, but his party split in terms of support and being against the coup. And then there's the religious elite, represented by Cardinal Andres Rodriguez. He also has been very clear that he would not be in favor of the elected president, Zelaya, returning to power, which, of course, then declares him as a golpista, a supporter of the coup regime. All of those groups have really been the ones who have benefited from this constitution that was drawn up in 1982 and want to keep it that way. And they are the ones who, when President Zelaya became a threat and wanted to be a voice for the people, an authentic voice, then he had to be removed at all costs. And that's exactly what the Hondurans did. And I might add, with a great deal of support from U.S. policy.
And U.S.-based companies like Chiquita, like Russell Athletics, so what is their contribution to this?
Chiquita Brands, of course, is one of the companies that's responsible for countries like Honduras becoming known as banana republics. Corporations like Chiquita, all their interest is primarily is to maximize profit at the cost of the human rights of laborers and always looking to pay as little as possible and earn as much money for the most wealth in the company. And so Chiquita has been associated with death squads very clearly in Colombia as well as here in Honduras. It's clear that Chiquita had a very strong interest in not having workers be empowered and also not having the minimum wage raised. President Zelaya clearly, one of his successes was to raise the minimum wage of the workers in this country, and that became a threat not only to the national economic elite, but to the international corporations, some of which you mentioned there as well. But other things have to do with international economics that President Zelaya would not let the international petroleum companies go without paying the taxes that they owed. Usually they found ways to get out of that, but not go under President Zelaya. So there's a whole combination of things that caused him to have enemies in the powers that be, and they ended up being the ones to commit the coup against him.
Andres, do you think it's a good time to try to see if President Zelaya is available?
Let's give it a try. Yeah, it looks good. One second. Me and Ken, producer here is President Zelaya.
Thank you so much, and we are extremely pleased to have this opportunity to speak with President Manuel Zelaya, who is still in the Brazilian embassy in Tegucigalpa, Honduras. One of the two most important questions is, what does the illegal election that was just held in Honduras actually mean or portend for a democratic Honduras?
En Honduras, murió la democracia. What is the democracy? Is that.
Democracy is dead.
Democracy is dead from Honduras. You understand?
Sí.
Okay. Entonces, eso aclara todo. No hay democracia. Murió. Is dead.
So, clearly the president is saying democracy is dead in Honduras as a result of the fraudulent elections and other things.
Does this usher in the complete and total dominance of the oligarchy? Is this tantamount to a period of fascism for Honduras?
Mire, en Honduras se ha instalado una dictadura y el nuevo presidente que surgió de elecciones cuestionadas se ha unido a la dictadura. Se ha instalado una dictadura.
So in Honduras, there clearly is a dictatorship, and the newly elected president has unified himself with that dictatorship.
How do you see your options going forward in terms of whether you'll stay in the embassy, try to leave the country? What is your next move?
Mire, a mí me preocupa el siguiente paso de la sociedad hondureña. Debe de ser buscar su reconciliación. Entonces nosotros estamos empeñados en seguir luchando en Honduras para que Honduras encuentre el camino de la paz y de la justicia.
So my real focus has to do with concentrating on the needs of the Honduran people and looking for ways to move forward in reconciliation. So the focus of my efforts will be around peace and justice making in the context of wanting to create that type of healing after this severe crisis.
Were you surprised that Oscar Arias called on all nations to recognize the illegal and illegitimate elections occurring in Honduras?
Yo he invitado a Oscar Arias a que venga aquí a percatarse de algo que él no conoce, que es el fraude electoral. Que venga a percatarse de la persecución y las violaciones a los derechos humanos. Le he invitado a Honduras a que venga a ponerse del lado del pueblo hondureño, no una estrategia para encubrir el golpe de Estado.
I have invited President Arias to come from Costa Rica to come here to Honduras so that he could find out about the very severe fraudulent electoral process that took place. And also to discover the massive and severe repression that has been the policy of this coup regime. And so if he would come here, he would find out that it is not worth it to try to validate an electoral process that ended up being a sham.
What has been the role of the United States during this entire process to the current day?
Estados Unidos abandonó la Carta Democrática de la OEA. Estados Unidos se unió con la dictadura que se está instalando en Honduras y está tratando de darle un barniz, de blanquear la dictadura.
The United States abandoned the Charter of the Organization of American States. The United States became complicit in the coup itself. And so the U.S. has tried to whitewash the fraudulent elections in order to portray them as a democratic expression of the Honduran people, when in fact it was the opposite.
Why do you think the United States is acting in this way?
Bueno, o sea, yo me remito a los hechos. Yo no juzgo su actuación. solo estoy diciéndole las consecuencias y los hechos que están sucediendo.
Well, I choose not to judge them by their intentions, but I only judge them on their actions. And I try to point out that their actions do not follow the expressions in terms of their interest in democracy itself.
In relationship to that, Colombia and Panama and Peru and Costa Rica have been very much in line with the United States. What does that division mean for the evolution of a democratic continent that heretofore was so beleaguered by fascist governments and imperial design?
Los presidentes que están apoyando esta salida de elecciones bajo cautiverio, bajo represión, los presidentes que están apoyando esta forma de blanquear un golpe de Estado, donde quedan los mismos militares, la misma Corte de Justicia, el mismo Congreso, se están poniendo una soga al cuello. Están autorizando que a ellos también los quiten y que los saquen los militares en los próximos días.
The presidents of the nations that you mentioned, who are going along with the whitewash of sanctifying an election in the midst of a coup process, they are ending up holding a noose to their own neck, because by being complicit in a process against Honduras that has been so repressive, they are inviting that very process happen in their own country.
I was just interested in the flip side of that. Any comment on the recent election in Uruguay?
You may or may not get to ask him that. He just grabbed another phone call. Oh, I'm sorry about that.
Oh, that's okay.
Thank you so much. What about your thoughts?
I'll tell you my thoughts. My first family comes from Uruguay, and my political consciousness was born when I was 15 years old, and my uncle, my mother's brother, was taken political prisoner by the Uruguayan military dictatorship at the time, which was also supported by U.S. policy. My uncle was tortured severely and was in prison for over 8 years. I learned about real authentic democracy as well as real authentic repression and torture and crimes against humanity. So I ended up dedicating a great deal of my life to trying to change U.S. foreign policy toward Latin America. I lived here in Honduras for 5 years in the late 90s and worked with human rights and indigenous organizations, many of whom are the ones right now who have faced the most severe brutality by the de facto government. In terms of the election in Uruguay, it is definitely something to be celebrated. The election of Pepe Mujica is really astounding, because not only was he part of the Tupamaro movement to bring change, which is what my uncle and my aunt were also a part of, but also he was one of 9 leaders of the Tupamaros, and they ended up being called the rehenes, which is the hostages. They were the ones who were most brutally tortured and put in solitary confinement for around 12 years. He, as a leader of that entire movement, is now a leader of his nation, and we hope that he will very much remember the roots from which he came in order to be a very strong advocate of the people's rights in Uruguay, as a number of his colleagues are doing in South America, and it's exactly what President Zelaya was trying to do here in Honduras.
Well, given what you've said, Andres, just to complete this, your thoughts and understanding about U.S. imperial design of the Obama administration with the stance that it has taken in Honduras. What does this portend for the continent of Latin America?
I really believed in President Obama's history as a community organizer, as someone who very much wanted to bring change in U.S. policy, both domestic and foreign. I think that some of what he has done would even make him deserving of having won the Nobel Peace Prize. However, most of what he's done goes completely against, I think, his very own conscience. And to listen to him speak in front of so many hundreds of cadets at West Point around the need for U.S. national security to have 30,000 more troops in Afghanistan is absolutely revolting. It's completely heretical and contrary to conscience. It's exactly, really, symbolic of what has ended up happening here in Honduras. The main coup perpetrators have been trained at the School of the Americas, which President Obama has not hinted that he will shut down, even though it is the School of the Americas Watch movement that has been one of the most successful and growing movements to promote peace and justice in the Americas and to stop U.S. complicity in torture-making and in having trained the dictators and the coup-makers, including, of course, the coup perpetrators here in Honduras. So the Obama administration did one symbolic good thing around Honduras, which was to name Hilda Solis as part of the verification commission of the accord that was signed. However, that commission itself never even met once. It was never empowered to do its work in what symbolic gesture to bring some positive change to the situation here in Honduras, when in fact the real actions portray a different story. And those real actions involve ongoing training of Honduran soldiers at the School of the Americas. Those actions include the United States never even declaring that a military coup d'etat occurred in Honduras, even though the legal advisors of Hillary Clinton urged her to declare that a military coup had taken place in Honduras. She did not follow the advice of her own legal experts.
And we're going to have to leave it there because we're about to run out of our minutes. You've been gracious and you've been tremendously importantly analytic. Thank you so much. We've been speaking with Andres Contreras, editor of the Latin American or the Spanish edition of Democracy Now! Also, Director, Program on the Americas, Nonviolence International, still taking refuge in the Brazilian Embassy in Honduras with President Manuel Zelaya, and special thanks for the exclusive provided to speak with President Manuel Zelaya himself. Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash. And log on to our new website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.